Osman Atalan was well pleased with the report that Penrod brought him back from the passes of the Abyssinian Highlands. He listened with great attention to his suggestions concerning the conduct of the campaign against Emperor John, and they discussed all these in exhaustive detail during the course of the long return journey to Omdurman. Once they reached that city, Penrod found that the conditions of his imprisonment were much relaxed. He had achieved a position of conditional trust, which had been his objective from the first day of his capture. It was what he had set out to achieve by indulging Osman Atalan and pretending to submit to his will. However, he was still accompanied at all times by selected agajirs of Osman's personal bodyguard. During the months after their return to Omdurman, Osman spent much time with the Caliphate Abdullahi. Al-Nur told Penrod that he was trying to persuade Abdullahi to allow him to return to his tribal domain in the desert. However, Abdullahi was too foxy and devious to allow a man of such power and influence as Osman Atalan to escape his direct supervision and control. Osman was allowed out of Omdurman only for brief punitive raids and reprisals on those persons and tribes who had incurred Abdullahi's displeasure, or for hunting and hawking excursions into the desert. When he returned to the city, Osman found himself with much time on his hands. One day he sent for Penrod. "I have watched the way you wield a blade. It is contrary to usage and custom, and lacks even the semblance of grace." Penrod lowered his gaze to hide his anger at the insult, and with an effort refrained from reminding him of their first meeting at El Obeid, in which the mighty Caliph Atalan had countered Penrod's fate by raising his targe and blocking his own view of the thrust that followed, a riposte that passed close to his heart. "However," said Osman, "it holds some interest." Penrod looked up at him and saw the glimmer of mockery in his eyes. "Exalted Caliph, from such a master swordsman as you are, this is praise that warms my soul," he mocked in return. "It will amuse me to practice at arms against you and to demonstrate the true and noble usage of the long blade," said Osman. "We will begin tomorrow, after the morning prayers." The next morning they faced each other with naked blades. Osman set out the rules of engagement. "I shall try to kill you. You will try to kill me. If I succeed, I will hold your memory in contempt. If you succeed, my agajirs," he indicated the 15 men that formed a circle around him, "will immediately kill you. But you will be buried with much honour. I shall commission a special prayer to be recited in the mosque in your memory. Am I not a benevolent master?" "The mighty Atalan is fair and just," Penrod agreed, and they went to it. 20 minutes later, when Osman was slow on the recovery, Penrod nicked his forearm in warning. Osman's gaze was murderous. "Enough for now. We shall fight again in 2 days' time." After that, they fought for an hour every second day, and Osman learnt to recover swiftly and riposte like a hussar. Gradually, Penrod found himself more seriously taxed and was forced to exert all his own skill to restrain his opponent. At the end of Ramadan, Osman told him, "I have a gift for you." Her name was Lala. She was a frightened and abused little thing, a child of war, pestilence, and famine. She did not remember her father or mother, and in all her short life nobody had ever shown her kindness. Penrod was kind to her. He paid one of Al-Nur's concubines to wash her as though she were a stray puppy and to dress her tangled hair. He provided her with fresh clothing to replace her rags. He allowed her to cook his meals, launder his clothes, and sweep the floor of the small cell off the courtyard of the agajirs, which was his lodging. He let her sleep outside his door. He treated her as though she was human, not an animal. For the first time in her life, Lala had sufficient food. Hunger had been part of her life from as far back as she could remember. She did not grow fat, but her bones were gradually covered with a little flesh. Sometimes he heard crooning softly over the fire as she cooked his meal. Whenever he returned to the courtyard of the agajirs, she smiled. Once, when Osman had succeeded in touching his right shoulder with the long blade, Lala dressed the wound under his instruction. It was a flesh wound and healed swiftly. Penrod told her she was an angel of mercy, and he bought her a cheap silver bracelet in the souk as a reward. She crept away with it to a corner of the yard and wept with happiness. It was the first gift she had ever received. That night she crept shyly onto Penrod's ungareb, and he did not have the heart to send her away. When she whimpered with her nightmares, he stroked her head. She woke and cuddled closer to him. When he made love to her, it was without lust or passion, but with pity. The following evening, while she was cooking his dinner, he spoke to her quietly. "If I asked you to do something dangerous and difficult for me, would you do it, Lala?" "My lord, I would do whatever you ask." "If I asked you to put your hand in the fire and bring out a burning brand for me, would you do it?" Without hesitation, she reached towards the flames, and he had to seize her wrist to prevent her thrusting her hand into them. "No, not that. I want you to carry a message for me. Do you know the woman Nazira, whom they call Ami? She works in the harem as a servant of the white concubines?"
"I know her, my lord."
"Tell her that Filfil is safe with Al-Sakawi in Abyssinia." Filfil, or Pepper, was Saffron's Arabic name. Lala waited her chance to accost Nazira discreetly at the well, which was a gathering place for all the women, and delivered the message faithfully. Nazira hurried back to give the news to Rebecca and Amber. Within days, Nazira had met Lala again at the well. She had a message for her to take to Penrod. "Yakob is here in Omdurman," Lala reported faithfully. Penrod was amazed. "It cannot be the Yakob I know. That rascal disappeared a long time ago."
"He wants me to meet him," Lala said. "What will you have me do?"
"Where will you meet?"
"I will be with Nazira in the souk at the camel market."
"Will it be safe for you?" Penrod asked. Lala shrugged.
"That is of no account. If you ask it, I will do it."
When she returned, he asked, "How was this Yakob?"
"He has two eyes, but they do not follow each other. One looks east and the other north."
"That is the Yakob I know." How could he ever have doubted him? Penrod asked himself. "He said to tell you that the peerless Yakob is still your servant. He has languished a year and 3 months in an Egyptian prison, unjustly accused of trading in slaves. Only when he was released was he able to go to the Lady of Aswan. Now she has sent him back to you with tidings that are much to your benefit." Penrod knew instantly who was the Lady of Aswan, and his heart leapt. He'd not thought of Bakita recently, but she was still there, as constant as she had ever been. With her and Yakob, he was no longer alone.
"You have done well, Lala. No one could have done better," he said, and her face glowed.
He had now established a line of communication to the outside world. But Lala was a simple child, incapable of remembering more than a few sentences at a time, and the meetings with Nazira and Yakob could be risked only at intervals of several days. Abdullahi and Osman had spies everywhere. Planning the escape was a long, drawn-out and complicated business. Twice Yakob had to leave Omdurman and make the hazardous journey to Abyssinia to consult Rider Courtney and Bakita. But very slowly, the plan took shape. The attempt would be made on the first Friday of Ramadan, 5 months hence. Yakob would have camels waiting on the far bank of the Nile, hidden among the ruins of Khartoum. By some ruse or subterfuge, Penrod would find his own way out of the courtyard of the Agajirs. Nazira would spirit Rebecca and Amber out of the harem to a waiting felucca that she would arrange. Penrod would meet them there, and the felucca would ferry them across the Nile. Then on Yakob's camels they would dash up the south bank of the Blue Nile to where Jock McCrump would have the old ibis hidden in the lagoon of the little fish. He would take them up to Rosiris, where horses would be waiting for the final dash to the Abyssinian border.
"Will you take me with you, my lord?" Lala asked wistfully.
What on earth would I do with her? Penrod wondered. She was not pretty, but had an endearing monkey face, and she looked at him with worshipful adoration. "I will take you with me wherever I go," he promised, and thought,
Perhaps I can marry her to Jakob. She would make him a perfect little wife. Only 4 weeks later, when everything was at last in place, Lala brought Penrod another message, which struck him like the broadside of a heavy cannon. Amina Zierah says that Alzara has seen her first moon and become a woman. She can hide this from the exalted Osman Atalan, but in 1 month's time her moon will rise again. She will not be able to conceal it longer from him. The mighty Atalan has already ordered Nazira to watch for and report to him the first show of her woman's blood. He has announced that as soon as she is marriageable, he will offer Al-Zahara as a gift to the Caliphate Abdullah, who hungers for her. Even if he had to risk all of them, Penrod could not possibly allow Amber to go to Abdullah. It would be worse than feeding her alive to some obscene carnivorous monster. The entire plan had to be brought forward. They had a month's grace in which to change the arrangements. It would be a near-run thing. He sent the willing Lala almost daily to carry messages to Jakob. 2 weeks before the new date of the escape attempt, the Caliph Osman Atalan announced a feast and entertainment for all his relatives and his most loyal followers. The main compound was decorated with palm fronds, and 24 prime sheep were roasted on spits. The low tables at which the company sat on soft cushions were piled with dishes of fruit and sweetmeats. Penrod found himself placed in a position of preference, close to the Caliph, with Al-Nur at one hand and Mumun Digna on the other. When all had eaten their fill and the moon was as warm as the sunshine, with laughter rippling like the waters of the Nile, Osman rose, made a short speech of welcome, and commended them on their loyalty and duty. "Now, let the entertainment begin," he ordered, and clapped his hands. A finger drum began to tap a staccato rhythm, and then a murmur of surprise went up. Every head craned towards the side gate of the courtyard. 2 men led in a creature on a leash. It was impossible first to guess the nature of the animal. It moved slowly and painfully on all fours, forced by its handlers to make a tortuous circuit of the yard. It was only gradually that they realized it was a human female. Her hands and her feet had been crudely amputated at wrists and ankles. The stumps had been dipped in hot pitch to staunch the bleeding. She crawled on elbows and knees. The rest of her naked body had been whipped with thorn branches. The thorns had lacerated her skin. The mutilations were so horrible that even the hardened Agagiers was silenced. Slowly she crawled to where Penrod sat. The handlers tightened the leash and forced her to lift her head. Cold with horror, Penrod stared into Lala's little monkey face. Blood was trickling from her torn scalp into an empty eye socket. They had burned out her eyeballs with hot irons. "Lala," he said softly, "what have they done to you?" She recognized his voice and turned towards him. Blood was still oozing down her cheeks. "My lord," she whispered, "I told them nothing." Then she collapsed with her face in the dust, and though they yanked on the leash, they could not rouse her. "Abadan Riji," Osman Atalan called, "my trusted Agajir of the famous sword arm, put this sorry creature out of her agony." A terrible silence hung over the gathering. Every man looked at Penrod, not understanding, but enthralled by the drama of the moment. "Kill her for me, Abadan Riji," Osman repeated.
"Lala,"
Penrod's voice trembled with pity. She heard him and rolled her head towards him, blindly seeking his face.
"My lord," she whispered, "for the love I bear you, do this thing. Give me release, for I can go on no longer."
Penrod hesitated only a moment. Then he rose and drew his sword from its sheath. As he stood over her, she spoke again.
"I will always love you."
And with a single blow,
he struck her head off the maimed body. Then he placed his foot on the blade, and with a sharp tug at the hilt, snapped it in two. "Tell me, Abadan Riji," said Osman Atalan, "are those tears I see in your eyes? Why do you weep like a woman?" "They are tears indeed, mighty Atalan. And I weep for the manner of your death, which will be terrible." "With the help of this creature, Abadan Riji was planning to escape from Omdurman," Osman explained to his Agajirs. "Bring in the Sheba and place it round his neck."